Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come. I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005. And my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here.
Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven, the radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in, and so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the multi-shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it, and it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200, and it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5", so and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long. About 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here. I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes, okay? And I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. But this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide. And now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and, you know, then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed, too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light. Lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6-foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually share, sit side by side on this couch, or you can put in another, you could pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheathe it with either 7/16 inch OSB or plywood. Either one would work. Now it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction, and then your casters attached to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing, and the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has, this back platform is 2'6" wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1'9" wide platforms that can be raised up. And as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. Takes about 20 2x4s to build this. That's about it. And you're looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down. The door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4-foot wide by 6-foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, could sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4-foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6-foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5'8" tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms, which I'll show you, I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here, or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end, and you could set up your cooking supplies and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you. You've got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news, happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area. You could set these up, and people would at least have shelter for survival until they can get into houses or shelter, bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows. So you got really good light in this. And it's got an excellent sleeping space. It would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people. Okay? And, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably, and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't, but they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand or sell your crafts or your books, or, whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window, and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off. A 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just then hide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or we have, that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride. But it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. You know, we could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people to sleep and, to take care of their basic needs. And that's what this structure is about. So I hope you like this design. It's called the Multi-Shack. You can get the plans for free on my website, simplesolarhomesteading.com. Up at the top, look at Multi-Shack. Now, there is a button there if you would like to donate. Your donations are used by me to design structures like this and build small houses. I work with a lot of homeless people that don't want to be in the system, that want to build their own off-grid cabins and houses and places like that. I help them with designs and building those projects. So any donation, if you can donate, is very appreciated and will help with those projects. All right, folks, I hope you like this project called the Multi-Shack, and have a great day.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using a generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
All right, today, our title is Boots on the Ground, Jacksonville, Florida, and we're on Faith Street. We've got, let's see, 5 or 6 items here. What we need to organize. And this is in no particular order. Boots, we need boots on the ground in the radio studio as our de facto call center. And we will get that from the boots on the ground people. We started with 4 people remotely, through phones and internet. So we started with 4, but then as of Monday, Tuesday, we doubled that, a little bit over there. We got 5 boots on the ground in Jacksonville. So 5 plus the original 4, so we got over half boots on the ground in Jacksonville, Florida. So we got 9 people. Hey, we got 9 friends. Okay. That's the way it's worked out so far. 9 friends. 9 friends, each friend has 2 hands each, so we've got 18 hands involved so far. That's our hand wealth. Let's see. Now, we won't have it this coming week, but what we need to plan, and I'm looking for a place today, Thursday, until we get it. We got until 6 p.m. Monday to find a place where we can start doing our
So we can announce on Monday our meet, eat, greet, and build locations. Now, what is all this meet, greet, eat, and build? Since we need a place or places where we can meet people, and it can't be a hotel conference room or nothing like that. It has to be a place where we can actually meet people, greet people with our work clothes on. Don't be coming with your Sunday best now. And now you don't have to participate, but you can watch. You can ask questions, all that. But we'll be eating, like, and this will take place on Tuesday evenings, typically from, let's say, 6 to 7 p.m., maybe 6 to 7:30, something like that, where we'll be, and you know what, we might have, let's see, 6 to 7:30. Yeah, 6 to 7:30. It might end up 8 at the latest. But where we meet, greet, eat, and then we're building. So we're going to be building something that we can assemble in 1 hour, thereabouts. All right. Which means we got to prefab parts before the folks get there. All right, but anyway, so I'll be looking for a place today and tomorrow. You know, from now, I have until now, until 5:59 p.m. on Monday to find a place, at least one place for us to do that, because every Tuesday we're going to have that event. At the same time, now I'm in Florida right now, but I've got to find, because I've been looking at bus routes, because I'm not driving a personal car, so I looked at Greyhound, another bus schedule. They're not really fitting my schedule. I might end up having to hire a private driver. I might have to end up hiring, because Tuesdays will be pretty soon. It'll be a day trip. I'll leave here. Jacksonville's about 4.5 hours away from where I'm at, four and a half hours away. So go up there, do the meet, greet, eat, and build, then head on back here. Let's see. So we had to find a location for that. Hey, I'm thinking out loud the whole time, people. 619, we're on for the second day YouTube Live, powered by I Am Streaming. But we're on YouTube as well, live right now. And under It's My House TV or DIY Housing TV. All right, so look for either It's My House TV or DIY Housing TV. We're on live right now, and there's a chat room on there too. All right, so this is our day two on that, so we have to build that up too. But anyway, let's see. Now, once again, I'm thinking out loud, so 619-768-2945. We'll put something in the chat also. Now, I was thinking out loud. You guys can think out loud with me. I was thinking about, if all else fails, then we can have a storage unit up in Jacksonville, where we have, you know, our materials or maybe tools. Typically, storage areas, storage, those storage communities are secure and everything. And that also, I'm just thinking out loud, could be a de facto meeting place, where we can meet, eat, greet, and build. Depends on how big that storage area is. But I'm just thinking out loud. I'm inviting all people with their ideas. Let's see. We'll be doing Saturday built meet eat week. We're doing the same thing on Saturdays as well. So I'm gonna have to get a driver for that as well. Actually, two. We'll need drivers from Jacksonville because our 4-acre spread, which is a Earthwell Forest, is 90. It's 90 miles away from 90 miles and 90 minutes. Whatever sounds easier on you. 90 minutes away from Jacksonville. So those events are on Saturday. All right. And let's see. And that's a day trip event. So it's 90 minutes. I don't consider that's just me. Some people think anything's over a half hour, and everybody's different. For me, 90 minutes is not that far of a drive. Because I've got to come further. I got to travel 3 hours to get to that. So in any event, so that's every Saturday. We need to drive for that. And then, of course, we're up to 18 hands. We started with 8 hands, and now we're up to 18 hands. All right, so that's over 100% in a week. All right. Now, this is all on Faith Street, so we'll get each of, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, these 5 items. Actually, I'm going to throw in 6 because we want to increase our hand wealth. So these 6 items, we're on Faith Street to get things started. Faith Street, and the thing about Faith Street, you know, a lot of people get caught up and get paralyzed by, you know, they're trying to look at the last step when you're going to finally arrive. No, the way Faith Street works is you see the next step after you take your next step. So if you want to know what the next step is, take one step. And after you take that one step, after that one step is completed, then you see the next step. So now what us? Okay. 2 weeks ago, we weren't talking about boots on the ground, people in the studio. All right. Yeah, that's interesting now because we took the step Monday. All right. And that gave us 10 more hands. Monday's broadcast brought us 10 more hands. That one step of Monday. You ever heard that expression, you know, you take one step, but God takes 2 big steps? Well, in this case, he got us 10 new hands, okay? All of them have feet, 10 more feet or foot or whatever you want to call it. And then he revealed, okay, 1, 2, 3, 5, 5, and by us taking that one step, we got 10 more hands, and 5 to 6 more steps got revealed that we have to take. All right. By 5:59 p.m. this coming Monday. Today's Thursday. So we're making progress. We've got some momentum going. So, and once again, despise not the day of small beginnings, but once again, we started off with 4 people. All right. Then we took, from that, the next step we took was the radio program. From the radio program, that gave us, once again, 10 more hands because 5 new people, 2 hands each, 10 more than we had. That's over double of what we originally had. So we're up to 9 friends and 18 hands all together. That's what we're talking about, hand wealth. And then the next specific 5, actually more than that, because Robin basically one of the steps, because we had communication problems on Monday night, but Robin took care of one of the steps in setting up our own board. Coming from I Am Streaming and her businesses, so she took care of that like really quick. So besides what Robin bought up, you know, the next six steps. And if you see any other steps that we need to take, let us know. But that's amazing. But just by taking that one step Monday, how many more steps will reveal, you know, then it's specific steps that we need to take. So, and one of the steps we did yesterday, because we had a Suzu meeting yesterday afternoon for about an hour. So we got, you know, part of this came out of that. Let's see, Robin, you there?
Yes, I am here, and Delmar is here as usual. Yes.
All right,
so
good.
I'm real happy with how everything was progressing. At first, I kind of grumbled at the technical issue. I'm a producer, so, you know, when we were experiencing those, I was just ready to knock teeth out and pull all my hair out, all that other stuff. But we debriefed several times since then, and now I can see the success.
And you
in
know
it.
What? Each one of those debriefs, Robin, each one in Delmar, each one of those, and then Willie's out there too. Each one of those debriefs were steps.
Yes. Yeah.
They were faith steps, each and every one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's when we take the step, then God, he does his miracles in between the steps. We just have to keep it moving. We have to keep it
right.
Keep stepping. Okay?
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Delmar, any comment?
Yes, it is done by divine order. All we have to do is keep the faith and finish. God, I'm sorry, get to the finish line that God's already done. Yes.
Right.
Speak in human terms about steps and all, but remember, God's work is finished. So I'm excited that we just got to keep on going. As Robin said, I remember we've been cross-trained for this. All of us.
Yeah.
It's not new to us.
Right.
We've been cross-trained for
this. Right. Well, like I said, we got the steps, so we, you know, just keep on stepping in. You're right. You just keep on. And there's simple steps. Sometimes maybe not easy, but doable. So... and like I said, with the several debriefs, like I said, it's stuff that we're not going to come up with. But you know what? Had Monday night, had we not taken that step on Monday night, we wouldn't have had the 10 new hands, 5 people. And if the phone lines, you know, didn't get all crossed up like they did Monday. And then, of course, now Delmar was very instrumental on that, because if Delmar had not been on the team and did what he did, he wouldn't have found out the feedback that we needed to hear, which was basically signaled to Robin, okay, all right, here are the steps that we can take. And you know what the beauty of all this is, we started off with really just an idea, just an idea. So, we're on Faith Street, so as long as we stay on it, we'll be all right.
Ellie, an idea
yes, sir.
Whose time has come. I think it was Victor Hugo said this, one of the most powerful transforming things in the world is an idea whose time has come.
Well, the time has come.
Aha!
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
Matter of fact, I'm thinking, Robin, you think, because We don't know how many calls we could have gotten had those phone lines been, you know, had somebody been, you know, able to operate them on that other end. But we might not have been ready for 40 calls.
That's right. This might be better than way it went.
Yeah.
Maybe this is better.
We might not have been ready for that.
Yeah, they would. They look, because remember, you got busy signals and all of that. So that already tells me that their system can't handle the capacity. And on mm-hmm. our line, there'll be a record of everyone. They can voicemail. There's text messaging. All of that. It's a two-way system, all on our conferencing. So we can dial out. People can call in. We can take it to the broadcast. We can take it wherever we go. Yes, sir.
But we also need to be, and this is another step that I guess we need to discuss later. But, you know, how many people can we accommodate on a weekly basis, face boots on the ground, you know, based on the number of people might call in. So.
Yep. And the beauty of it, too, is the boots on the ground, we can have them download the app, and they'll get the dial pad with our phone number on it. So our phone system is portable, if you will. It can be dispatched, deployed. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, deployed is the right word.
Deployed. So to our boots on the ground, they'll just load it up on their devices, and boom, there they go. And so we can communicate right within that system right there.
Right.
That's ingenious. Right. L.A., you
yes,
mentioned
sir.
there was some towns, I think you were talking for some of the black community, where there's no radio station. Can you mention that?
Most of them don't have a radio station.
Given what Robert just said, we could take a mobile station there, go in and park and broadcast all those down. Folks come by and listen.
So, yeah,
that's
coming with the mobile advanced broadcasting in the neighborhood, the Maven.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's in the plans. We're making a kit, if you will. Yes. And so, yeah, named after my father, Murray J. Maven, the mobile advanced broadcasting in your neighborhood. Yes. Yeah, yeah. All right now. I see you trying to get ahead of me. I see you trying. You right there with me, Dale.
These events that we're going to. Go ahead, Delmar. You were saying?
No, I was just thinking about. And thinking Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill talked about when a number of minds come together, there's a third or another invisible mind that kicks in. So when we start talking like this, the spirit and mind of God start to manifest things through different ones of us. So that's what's going on. Yes.
Yeah, that's in his book, Napoleon Hill's book, because Think and Grow Rich came up from Napoleon Hill's book, The Laws of Success. And in chapter one, the principle that you're talking about is called the mastermind of life.
Right. Yep.
I think that's either chapter one or a definite chief aim, one of the two, but the mastermind alliance, that's what you're talking about. Now one, I think I sent the video out to Willie yesterday.
Yeah.
The these events, these Tuesday night, the Tuesday night and Saturday night events could be streamed. And that's one way to, to get the, because you mentioned, like, so most of the black townships, at least the ones that I've been in, they don't have their own, they might have a website. Most don't, but some have a website, but none of them, to my, at least the ones I've set foot in, have their own radio station or media, media outlet.
So watch this. We can set them up a radio station also wherever we go, because that's what I do. So we could, if the internet, right, and then if they have a location, boom, they could log in to the server, go on the air, broadcast all of that.
Mm-hmm. Let me throw this idea out too. Once again, people, I'm thinking out loud. I enjoy people wherever you're listening to us, particularly with Blog Talk, 619-768-2945. Call in, press 1. On YouTube, we're on It's My House TV or DIY Housing TV, and there's a chat room there. I have to look in on it. You can put a question in the chat if you want to. There was several years ago, back in the 80s, there was in Baltimore, Maryland, a magazine called Black Church Magazine. And it connected the dots with, black churches in the Baltimore, Maryland metro area. And so one day I said, that's my market. I want to, do some advertising. So I went to the Black Church Magazine office, which was like in Baltimore County, which is right outside of Baltimore, Maryland. Because Baltimore City is its own municipality. Baltimore County is a whole different animal. It's, So I went there and the people who, and I don't think Black Church Magazine publishes anymore, but the magazine was owned and controlled by Koreans, which, if you look at the carryouts, the conveniences, the lake trout carryout restaurants out there, the Chinese restaurants and black neighbors in Baltimore, they're basically owned by a whole bunch of Korean families. So it was, but they realized that a lot of money was in the black church. So they started, Koreans now, started a magazine called Black Church Magazine. Once I tried to look it up, I haven't seen it online or anything like that. So I'm saying all that, speaking out loud, thinking out loud, really, to, we can probably have our own version of that anywhere we set up shop. I'm just thinking out loud. We don't have to actually set up a magazine or anything like that, but you've already mentioned it with the Maven and, having it, because the Black Church Magazine, that was a niche market magazine that they didn't have any competition. Anybody who advertised it.
L.A., remember this. Asians have targeted the black community for years, going all the way back to the 50s. They come in here with a plan to market and make their living in the black community. So that's not, now down here, and maybe in Chicago, they have taken over the, what they call with the fingers, the hair. They have moved in with the hair stuff.
Hair care products. They're going
to take it from them. That's right, hamper, all the beautiful, they have come in and taken up all of that. And that is what's going on.
They've taken over hair care products, black hair care products, beauty supply. They got a lockdown on that. I mean, Dudley or somebody like that, a Proline might get a trickle in here and there. Well, Dudley goes directly to the cosmetologist. But the black hair care supply, the Koreans have got that, a lockdown on that. The nail salons, and I saw a video on YouTube. I don't know if I played it on here once. But there's a video on YouTube of a woman that black woman that went into a nail salon. Anyway, long story, a fight broke out. And then after it was all said and done, the dissatisfied, you would think that this woman, after she got into a fight in the salon, would leave and go to another salon. After that was all said and done, she still wanted her nails done at this particular Korean salon. So they have a, I don't know what percentage of luck they have on the, but they got a pretty good hold on black women when it comes to nails. Rob, you know anything about that? Because a lot of black women who have their nails done have it done by Asians. So, I mean, what's the deal with that? Price, quality, what? I don't know.
I have a comment.
Go ahead, Jamar.
The Asians are adaptable. They will come into black community, kiss butt, whatever it is, to succeed. They don't push back. They are flexible in their thinking, and they're saying if you want 10 cents worth, we'll sell you 10 cents worth. They don't come in with some rigid attitude. They are flexible to whatever they have to do in the black community, like I said, fight, kiss, whatever, hug. I know this from experience. I worked with them for years. They are adaptable to the black community. They will, like I said, hug and kiss you if that's what it takes for them to succeed. So that's one of the things they have in mind. Thank you.
Yeah, but that's just shucking and jiving, doing what they have to get the money. They're not spending their money in black businesses. They're not supporting other black businesses. They're not renting from black people.
You're right.
So
Amen.
so it's like there's no substance there, if that makes sense. Uh-huh.
Yes, right. That's right.
And so
Al's doing the same thing. They come in, they suck out, and they don't put nothing back.
People.
Well, my question is, why are not all black women? But, I mean, they have a lot. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is. I would say they got at least maybe 50% toehold of black nail business. Like, for instance, there was Southfield Mall. They closed them out down right outside of Detroit. That was a pretty big mall when it was open. And they had two nail salons in there, two Korean salons in there. And the customer base, because this is right outside of Detroit, Koreans, two nail salons in the same shopping mall, but black female customer base, hands down. So,
the question to be asked is, and it's not just pertaining to nail salons, but why do black women spend almost 100% of the money that they make outside of their own community? That's the question you need to ask.
Well,
and
you just asked it, so.
On
okay. Rob, before Delmar, Robin, what's your take on that?
My take is that we're so bombarded. Everything is commercialized, right? So they took hip-hop from us and turned it into a weapon to use against us, right? So now you've got hip-hop, which tells you, doing drugs, wearing your clothes, hanging off your booty, all this other spend, these other violence towards women, bees and hoes, all this is, they're telling us is acceptable. and we're bombarded with this commercialism and this look, have your hairs done, your nails done, all that. We're fed all this information, garbage in is garbage out. So as a man thinks, so is he. So you get all these people that's getting all this senseless information, and they see the videos, they see the reality TV, the news, all of that. And it's a look. It's an image. Everybody can present a persona, whatever they want, through this little square box that's called the chat box. Or we can pick up the phone and don't even have to show our face. And just with our voice, we can project this whole image to the whole world. That's nothing that what we are. And boy, it sure is affordable. All we have to do is just go over here to Muyuk Songs and get our nails done and get our hair done. And then they're not looking at the fact that if you try and go and try to operate on a beauty supply or hair supply, look and see how difficult it is for you to even obtain the products.
Now black women will let them do the nails, but I don't think black women are letting anybody touch their hair other than mostly black people. That's from my observation.
No, but they buy their hair from the hair supplies.
Well, they do that.
Oh. And then they get sold substandard hair. It's really difficult for them to get the hair. I mean, it's very difficult for them to turn around. You'd say, oh, well, you know, we can just balance it out. We can open up our own salons and open up our own. But it's there's so many things that stand against it, and beyond the shop owners. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because a lot of that here is manufactured outside the U.S.
Hold on. Hello?
Hello?
Good morning. Hold on one second. And we got 309-306. Okay, I'm back, people.
Okay, Delmar, you had a comment?
Yes, I have an insight, and this is my perspective from, as Robin said, asking the right question and trying to understand it is very important. If you don't have the right question, and here's where I take from, and perhaps Robin, because of her spiritual work, and it's not excluding you, Ellie, but there's a, most of the time we give a, what you call a circular human observation of what happened, and that's important. But on a deeper look, this is a spiritual matter. And what happened to the black community, again, this is my understanding from meditation on, when we transition from segregation to integration, we left some of the primary values that we had in the black community. We left behind. I grew up in a black culture down south where there was respect and honor in the black community. We stayed together and looked after each other because we had to, and we believed in that. Now, today, one of the spiritual things that happened, we don't have those values. Values are not physical. Light and flash and all, that's not my value. But because we made that trade unknowingly, we don't have the unity that say, I'm going to deal with my people and support my people because that's for that reason. Example, black man has a tire shop and he charged $20 to change the tire. Mexican go down the corner and charge $10, and we start going out to the $10 shop. Instead of approaching my brother, he said, hey, let's compete. Go 12. Don't just keep fighting. He got 10, but we're going to support you because we're going to stick together like they're doing. So I think there's a deeper understanding of what has happened and what is happening, and that we have lost our spiritual connection, that we as the black community have values that we're not going to compromise. As Robin said, you go down to Chinatown, Chicago, anywhere else, they're not going to trade with you on that. You can't go in their business in the neighborhood and do stuff. But they will come to ours, and we'll put our own selves out of business because, again, we don't have that attitude. Again, I grew up in the Mount Bay area. No, we were self-sufficient. The money stayed in the neighborhood. And we were strong because we were supporting one another because of Jim Crow's, and you may have heard this before, we didn't use the N-word down there about each other. That word is only referred to outside the community by other folks who was talking about us, against us. So my point is, from the spiritual insight, we lack the spiritual commitment to value one another because we are, not that we're better, no, because we are. There's nothing wrong with being black or whatever it is like that. I don't have to apologize for targeting my community and saying I'm going to support it first. I don't have to apologize for that because it's needed. But when I decide that I'm going to abandon my own people to go support somebody else, there's something wrong with that kind of thinking. And I think it might need to be addressed. And the black church is the avenue to go with that. Thank you.
Well, one thing I think we need to look at is the supply chain here. We need to start manufacturing. We need to start making what we buy, what we consume.
Amen.
So we need to, make wigs, you know, make nails, make, now you do have Dudley Products, Proline, Johnson Products out of Chicago. So there's a handful of manufacturers out there, or in some cases, like when it comes to wigs, jump on a plane. Matter of fact, this is one friend of the show, Amani Murph, out of Nashville, Tennessee. I got to get her back on here. Prior to the pandemic, she's a black woman, lives in Nashville, Tennessee. She had planned to go to China. And, buy bundles or whatever it was, direct where you get it at a dramatic discount on the price. But we need to look at, matter of fact, let me give an example from my personal life. One time I was hungry, I was up in D.C., and I was in the mood to get me some wings and fries from the neighborhood carryout. So I went walking, and there was a brand new carryout, which was black owned and operated, walking distance from the house. So I went in there first. Now I already knew my regular place. I knew their prices. So I said, well, let me give these new people, a look. So I went in there and their price was too high for me that day. So I left them and went to the Korean place a few doors down. They was about four or five doors down. Walking is a short walk. So then I got it. I wanted the shortest way back home, so I had to go right back in front of the place that I walked out of with the wings. Now, as I thought back, because I got dirty stares on the way when I was walking past, and I understood it. Now, looking back at it, let's take a look at what are the distinctions between the Korean-owned place that sold wings versus the black place that was sold wings, and later on they went out of business, the black place. Let's look at some distinctions here, and let's just take race totally out of it. All right. Number one, more than likely, the place that sold, the Asian place, the Koreans that sold wings, they're more than likely connected to a farm. And on that farm, they had other people, other shop owners who collectively in a co-op form owned that farm. They had an operation going where they raised chickens. So they didn't have to go to Giant Safeway or a wholesale manufacturer to get chickens. They had their own farm. They had their own butchering system. They had their own trucks. They had their own warehouses. And they were connected to other Korean families who had other outlets to a high degree in black communities throughout the DMV area and white neighborhoods as well. They had that supply chain, whereas more than likely that standalone black family didn't have any of that.
So
they're
the
able to sell at a lower price versus the other place that couldn't.
It's because other cultures, they have rights of passage. They bring their babies and they have their babies and they wear them in pouches and go to work. There'll be toddlers running around that restaurant. They're teaching their youth about business, about the family business, about all of that.
Robin, hold it. Great point you brought up. I'm going to take a little snippet out of that. Excellent point you brought up. Now, a lot of these Asian family, anybody, once again, a radio audience or YouTube audience or everything that's Robin set up, that audience, 619-768-2945, press 1. You can voice what you want, your comment as well. Out of that, now here's a very important thing that you brought up. When mom and dad, let's say, I've been watching a lot of Hawaii 5-0 late at night lately. Chen Ho, the Chen Ho family, okay. Mom and dad Chen Ho, they're married, they have a family, they get up in the morning and they go to the family business, which might happen to be in the black neighborhood. They go to the family business together, they work together. As you said, they got, they carry that toddler around with them as whatnot. And then they close up shop. Now, they don't live in the neighborhood. They go live somewhere else. Okay. But as a couple and a family, they're together the whole day. All right. Now let's take that black family. I don't know the whole backstory, but more than likely, if it's a husband or what, well, the wife may have to go, or either one of them, they go to they carry out, they're trying to make a go of. They don't have a supply chain that they're connected to. They're not connected to a farm. They're not connected to other store owners or nothing like that. They're not buying anything at, cost or whatever, and their spouse goes, and since we're talking about D.C., they might have a government job, D.C. government, federal government, Northern Virginia, Maryland government, whatever. So we're talking about two entirely different dynamics, because that day I bought those wings based on the money I had in my pocket. So I went to the Korean people, not because they were Korean, it's because I got more bang for my buck. But like I say, if you look back at it, what's the supply chain? Just like with the nails and the hair and all this other stuff, we need to start manufacturing. And that's what we're doing with these tiny houses. You can go, me and Rob were talking about earlier this morning, you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's, or you go online and buy you a tiny house now. All right. Our distinction is taking a page from the Amish, the Mennonites, the Hutterites, and may as well throw in the Jehovah's Witness. Oh, no. We're teaching you how to cut out the middleman. We're teaching you how to cut out Home Depot, cut out Lowe's, cut out all these other people, and get it at a lower price, and you got a community to support you. That's where we're at. Anyway, Robin.
And when I get a chance, let me know what you think.
Go ahead, speak.
Listen, in addition to that, there has been an attitude, an expression in the modern, again, looking at some pro-civil rights prior to Jim Crow. There are people who think that if we try to do something just for blacks, that's wrong. We got to try to mix it in. I believe we're the only culture in this country that's trying to assimilate. You know what I mean? Trying to assimilate. Hey, no, we're not trying to be like nobody. We ought to be telling our people we ought to be building our own house because we are black. Forget about what the man think about that. That's what we should do because that's a focus of interest and value. Going back to what Robin said, we have failed to teach our children there's nothing wrong with being black. You don't have to apologize and try to blend in with anybody or try to be like anybody.
You know
your
what?
Value is already there.
Take the race out of it. Because when they do rites of passage, they don't go, well, you know, you're Asian against the whole world, and it's okay for you to be Asian. It's okay for you to be white. We don't need to be told it's okay for us to be okay who we are. We need to be told the rites of passage. So it used to be our people, we at the age of 12 and 13, the men were taken out and they were taught how to hunt and how to build a home. And by the time he finished building that home, he lived in it, and then he went and found a wife. And by the time that he's 12, 13, 14 years old, he's got a wife. Now they've got a family. And that young woman
knows how to support themselves.
So we're not giving information down about, and if we're giving information, we don't need to give them a pep talk. We need to give them effective, effectual information and opportunities. Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. From the TV show Roots, if people look at that at the very beginning, when they were going through manhood training, rites of passage, Robin was talking about, when Kunta Kinte was captured, his character was captured at 17. When he landed on the shores here in the United States or North America, Kunta Kinte at 17 knew how to hunt for his family. He wasn't going to Giant Safeway in 7-Eleven. He knew how to sustain a family, feed a family at 17, and build his own house, or in his case, hut. He knew how to do that at 17. Now, in this culture, right now in 2023, going to 2024, in the Amish community, okay, they go academically grades 1 through 8. After that, they formally start learning the family business, including how to get together with community and build debt-free houses. So young couples go from the parents' house to their own debt-free house. They're not going to social services, and I'm not knocking social services now, okay? I'm not knocking the government, anything like that. I'm just saying they cut out quite a few middlemen and start off debt-free. So that's what we're doing with what we're talking about. Cutting out the middlemen, and, you know, we can have our own rites of passage with this too. Just, you know, imagine if you had a Your son or daughter was 14. Learn how to build a house at 13. Well, I played on here before. Lauren Nelson, 11 years old. She's 12 years old now. Found
and
something on what?
Really,
what do you call it? Craigslist?
That's really not a remarkable thing. Remember the 4-H club and Girl
right.
Scouts and Cub Scouts and all of that? We used to get all of that. We used to get a lot of that in the educational. What is it? Upholstery shop. Home ed, economics. You know.
Matter of fact, I'm glad you brought that up. I know Beasley. If you can press one, if you want to chime in, he's got a very interesting. Piece to share, because that's another thing, making furniture, you know. Of course, these days you can either make it or, I mean, there's so much used furniture out here these days. You can go online now. I mean, you can furnish your whole house with used stuff, good used stuff, just off of, what do you call it, Facebook Marketplace. But you can also develop a new skill by making furniture. I have a next door neighbor. He has a business where he basically takes pallets and makes furniture and walls and furnishings like that, or parts of houses, just out of pallets, which you can get either free or on a really at least for now, cheap price. 5 years might not be different, but right now you can, you know, get on cheap. So, in any event, okay, anybody out in the audience got any comments? 619-768-2945. That's the number to call if you want to make a comment. I'm going to see what happened, if anything, on, what do you call it, YouTube, in the chat. Because this is day two, Robin? I think it's day two on this, yeah.
Yeah, this is day two. We're going
to build that up. But we're live on YouTube, which has a chat, so
mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be echoing, so I'm going to close that out. And then on YouTube, we're under what are we under on Robin? It's My House TV or DIY Housing TV. We got a caller here. Hold on, we got a caller here. 254, your mic is open. 254. Mic is open. You might have yourself muted. Okay, 254.
Hello?
Yeah,
how's
we can
that?
Hear you now. Yeah, it's good. Perfect.
All right. Well, I just want to add a couple of comments in on everything you're saying there about business and everything. One thing I will say that years ago when I was in San Antonio, I went through all the SBA classes and all this stuff. I was trying to get, I had a photography business, and I just wanted to expand my business a little bit, be able to purchase a little bit more equipment or whatever. And also I had opportunities to buy photo developing stores. And so I had opportunity to buy that from a Korean guy.
Okay.
Or I should say from an Asian person. So I went through all the SBA steps, got denied. And I was coming out of the SBA office the last time. And so here's this guy in front of me. He's all happy and everything because he got his loan for a restaurant. But he spoke no English. Spoke very poor English. So I stopped him. I asked him, I asked him right up front, say, are you an American citizen or what? And he said, yeah. He says, I got my green card or whatever, but he got a sponsor. He had sponsors that bankrolled his SBA loan. And so for an American citizen to get a sponsor, that's hard to do because the qualifications for being to get a sponsor, you don't have to be a citizen. You can't be a citizen to get the sponsors. That I thought was not fair.
Okay.
At least that's all I was told. That was years ago. So being able to have the funds you need to do stuff is important. The other part of my comment is that with my current business that I've had for a few years now, I deal with a lot of black churches primarily. They're not, I deal with all the kind of churches, but one thing that is pretty true from most of the black churches I deal with, they don't trust me. They think I'm trying to get over on them. Where if my white counterpart went in, they charge them 2.5 times as much as I do, and then they just bend over and just pay it. But when they get through paying them, the equipment fails, then they call me. I said, no, call them. Why are you calling me? I didn't put it in there. They said, but you're more reasonable price. Than I. No, but you don't trust me. So,
you know, Milton.
I've gone to,
I'm going to listen.
As we call them white churches, where I've gone in there time and time again, and they either cut me a check right there, tell me to get what I need, and I've had this happen twice. They just gave me a blank check. Say, fill it out, whatever you need to get, and make sure you pay yourself. And that was it. And these were, some were large, some were small. But I didn't have any,
right.
The trust value or the confidence in me doing the work was way higher walking in there than it was when I go to, as we say, a black church. And so that's always been my struggle. And even though I have repeat business from several black churches, it took years for them to just, you know, to trust me enough to work, because there's always opposition in there. Say, oh, he's just trying to get over. He's just trying to get over. Well, we have that mentality towards each other a lot. And there are the black business people I know deal with the same situation, unless you're in a certain echelon group. And then with the restaurants, I know that I have some friends that own a restaurant, but the supply chain thing is a very true thing. If you're not going to, if you don't have a good supplier, then you can't have good pricing.
Right, right.
And then with my business, I'm in with several distributors or wholesalers, and so that helps me out as well to have those wholesalers there to where I'm paying wholesale versus retail to do the job. And I started off paying retail because I didn't have any wholesalers, and so
right.
That's helped out a whole bunch. And then last comment part is so many people grow up with disadvantages in that they've never used any tools before in their life. When I worked at the college, it was amazing. There was classes on how to use a screwdriver and a drill and a hammer and things, because there's so many kids that's never had that experience because either there's nobody in their house that teaches them that, or that never had any tools in her house. They always, you know, it doesn't matter what walk of life you came from, you can have people from, you know, the high end to the low end, and they've never used a tool. They've never, you know, they've never cut grass. They've never, you know, and so.
You know, Willie, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that we can throw in this ministry. I never thought about it the way you put it, but you're right. There's a lot of people that don't know how to use tools. Now, Home Depot, they might, or Lowe's, either one of them, they occasionally have classes, you know, they'll teach you how to use whatever. But then, of course, after you learn, they teach you how to use it, you know, the next step they take is, they, you know, they have to supply the buy. But I'm glad you brought that up. That's something that we can offer in the ministry. A lot of people do not know how to use, they don't know how to use a hammer. As silly as that might, well, you know, I'm not even going to say it's silly. But some people just don't know how to use tools.
They just don't. And so, but then for me growing up with parents who, my father, there was nothing my father couldn't do. He did electrical. We did, his father was a mason, did steam work.
Right.
And so we all can do cement work. We learn to sew. My mother was a seamstress, and we all learned to sew. We sewed. We did everything. You know, fix cars. My father's favorite thing to do was work on cars, and so we worked on cars.
Well, share that story about that story you shared with me some time ago, where. You guys wanted some hamburger. What did your mother say?
Oh, oh. See now, this. My parents were. My mother was raised on the farm for the most part. My father was inner city, but he was also. They would go to the farm in the summer and work the farms in the summer on one of his relatives' farms, which still exists today, 100 something acres there in Georgia. But we didn't get McDonald's hamburgers or Burger King or Whataburger because, number one, my father didn't like going to those places. But number two, my mother didn't like, she says, I don't know what they put in that meat. So during the day, she'll say, or on a Saturday particularly, she'll say, y'all want hamburgers tonight? Yeah. Okay, why don't you go get the meat grinder? Here's the meat, and we'd grind the meat for the hamburgers. And so for years, we only had, we had fresh ground beef that we ground ourselves in the kitchen with our own meat grinder.
You know, that saves a lot of money also because, you know, your parents had three sons to raise, which, you know, is,
and,
you know, that's, you need money for that.
We always had
a garden. So if you wanted vegetables, go to the backyard. You had corn, peas, carrots, collard greens, turnip greens, mustard greens, all kind of greens, lima beans, strawberries. We had peas.
You ate
trees,
real
apple
food.
Trees. So we ate real food, unprocessed food. For years.
May I jump in? L.A., may I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead, Dama.
In support of what our brother was saying, remember back in the day of Booker T. Washington, and I always miss W.B. Du Bois. I can't get name right.
Yeah, Du Bois, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
There were two philosophies. Booker T. Washington's philosophy was independence. Be independent. He wasn't trying to get to blend in and be like nobody. Independence. Now, Du Bois's attitude was based on his culture. He believed that education was the answer. But who was the source of education? All the education was European-based. We tried that. If you go that way and blend in, it'll work for you. But that does not produce the independence that would be. Now, the brother makes back, like I say, we don't know how to use tools because now they tell us everything is computer. But watch this. You need to use the high-tech and computer. But when that thing goes down, what do you got? Nothing. You become dependent on that, you're going to be stuck somewhere, and somebody else is going to tell you when to turn it on, turn it on. And again, from a heads-up standpoint, we need to teach people we need to be as independent as you can possibly be because you cannot control the powers that man has set up for profit. That's his motive, profit. But as your brother's saying, when your mother and folk were telling you to make your own, That was the same idea of Booker Washington. Let down your bucket of where you are, take what you have, and he didn't use the word, but the more independent you are, the freer you are. If you have to have that man's system, you're the Pentagon, and he controls it, and therefore you're locked into it right there. Just a thought to consider. Thank you.
Well, this global inflation around here, because the price of everything is going up around, I mean, around the globe, everything's jumped up in price. So the I like that, but I like the way he was brought up, Willie, raised, because, you know, it's, you know, going to McDonald's now. You can, I don't know, how much does a Big Mac cost now? I haven't had one in a while, but it doesn't take much to spend $10 at McDonald's.
It's about $5.
And like the brother's mother said, you don't know what's in it. And you can't find out.
You don't know what's in it.
And you can't find out what's in it.
Because a lot of food that's out here is not real food.
Meat byproducts, clay, guar gum, xanthan, dextromethorphan, monosodium glutamate, derivatives.
Willie, by the time you got to now, Willie, by the time you and your brother got to West Texas, because y'all, I guess y'all weren't eating real food at the college, you know, the college food we were eating.
Something like that.
Because I know they switched, let's see, from my freshman year, I don't know, they had so many complaints, that name Marriott took over the food service. I don't know if I was a junior or senior, sophomore, some one of those years they switched up the food service. But, boy, make your own hamburger. I mean, literally made their own ground beef.
Yeah, so we were probably in high school by the time we started experimenting with other food, because playing sports and everything, so we run all around. We got,
right.
You know, but otherwise, prior to that, it was just like that.
What were we saying, Delmar?
I was just saying this thing about what's in the food, that trend is only increased. They're growing chickens and everything you eat can be produced in the lab, and that's not a byproduct thing. That's the way the business is going because, again, it's driven by profit. So all these people mean is how much money they can make. How, in fact, they're going to kill you 20 years later. They don't care. As long as you don't drop dead right then when you're eating.
The food,
now, they got 3D, yeah, 3D meat.
Yeah, it's neither vegetable nor animal.
Exactly. Chemical produced. You know what 3D meat is? Meat printed by a 3D printer? Meat? They just color it red, looks like a hamburger, and you eating, and your body was made to process that stuff. It wasn't made. It's not. And something's going to happen. It's like free for a high fructose corn syrup. That's the sugar now, right? Your body cannot process
right.
It. It's dealing with it, but it wasn't made to process because God didn't make it. That's man-made stuff. And I'm afraid we don't educate and teach more about what we're dealing with, more and more people get more entrenched in it and think because it's cheap and fast and colorful and smell good and look good, that's right. It's not.
A lot of food for thought. No pun intended.
I need to go take care of some business. LA, I need to go take care of some business for a time right out. I got rehab today. Thank you. God bless. We'll see y'all tomorrow.
All right. See you, Delmar. And we're about to wrap up in a few minutes anyway. Well, one thing now we're extracting from Willie, another step, and we're going to put that out there Monday night, and we're going to include that every broadcast. Is particularly when we meet for our boots on the ground session, is this is part of the safety part anyway. Learn what are the tools that you need, and how to use those tools. That's like very, very fundamental. So thanks for Willie for bringing that up. And we actually want to really make that like a requirement. That even if you say, you know, let's make sure we're all on the same page. But you know, because they're different type of hammers for different type of uses. Even plungers, you know, there are different type of plungers for your toilet right in your house. So, how do you use tools?
Whenever you go for a new job, a new build, a new whatever, there's orientation, right?
Right, right.
And at the orientation, they say, well, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. And it doesn't matter, every new site, every new environment, you have that initial orientation and training, and then you carry out the work.
You know what, matter of fact, I just got a visual in my mind. Prior to us, now this is the boots on the ground. Somebody from Uganda is trying to reach me. Anyway, am I still on air? Hello?
Yes,
you
we're still on.
Yeah, somebody from WhatsApp. All right, so real quick. For the Boots on the Ground class, which start in Jacksonville, before we actually have a session where we're actually building, we're going to go through the tools first. We're going to go through the tools first. Tools first, then build. So, Willie, that's a step.
Tools first and the proper handling safety.
Right.
Tools safety, you know.
Right.
People have to
Now, you know
show
what we could
with,
do?
What?
We can do a break. We can do it two ways. We can do a visual online, and then once again, when we're there in person, do it again where they actually handle it, you know, each and every one individually. But that's a very important. That's going to be the very first step.
Mm-hmm.
Tools, and as you mentioned, safety. So thank you. That's a step. We weren't thinking about that step Monday night, but that's a very important step because we don't want nobody losing a finger or toe or whatever else. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Go ahead, Robin, you were saying?
You have to show up with steel-toe boots, you know, a hard hat, you know, all of that. Hey, where's Bianchi?
No, I get texts from him just about every day.
Oh, okay. Just haven't.
I get texts from him just about every day.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's still around. But, well, you know what? Now, since you mentioned the hard hat and all that, now we can merchandise that stuff. We can have merchandise with that stuff on the hard hats and we can sell merch. Everything you're talking about, we can put it with our own label on it and sell it. That'll help finance everything. You know, the basics. So, but we can discuss that later. Anyway, hard hats without, you know, to bring our brand on it, gloves with our brand on it. But hey, Willie, that was a very important step. So, that's I never thought about it that way, but a whole lot of people just don't know. All right, so on that note, that's it for today. Everyone have a good rest of the day.